Are you struggling to leave a toxic relationship? How can you tell if your partner might be a narcissist? Would you like to heal from intimate partner abuse you've experienced in the past and learn how to avoid getting into another toxic relationship in the future? Welcome to the Heal, Grow, Evolve podcast, produced by MHNRnetwork.com, with your host, coach and expert on healing from narcissistic partner abuse, Kim Saeed of LetMeReach.com. Kim will guide you on your journey of understanding, recovery, and transformation after narcissistic abuse, and show you how life begins again after no contact. This show is brought to you by LetMeReach.com. Thanks for being here today.
Hello, survivors and thrivers. Welcome to another episode of Heal, Grow, Evolve. Today, we're going to cover how to prepare for court against a narcissist, especially if you have children. With us today is Sarasota family law attorney, Megan Lyons. Megan has developed a niche practice focusing on high-conflict personality disorders such as narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and other Cluster B personality disorders in her family law cases. She has acquired a lot of experience in successfully navigating cases in which there is a personality disordered adversary in the litigation. Megan, thank you so much for joining us today and offering us your expertise on this very important subject.
Thank you for having me.
It's really an honor. I know you're a busy lady, so I'm really happy you were able to join me for this interview today. Okay, so one of the most common questions I receive from people is how they should go about preparing for court against a narcissist, which in most cases is a spouse. And people are even more desperate when children are involved, and I can attest to how fear-inducing this is, and I learned a lot of things in my own experiences when divorcing a narcissist. But Megan, you deal with this almost every day. I think one thing people don't realize is how important it is to document abuse. Can you tell us a little bit about this and how important it is to document?
Yes, because a lot of times we're dealing with abuse that is of a covert nature or a subtle type of abuse that's harder to prove or may not manifest itself, physical conditions. I mean, sometimes it does, certainly, but in a lot of cases, it's more of the mental abuse, the mind control, the emotional abuse and emotional manipulation that's often not observable, you know, to other people other than the victim or the survivor in some cases. So one thing that I tell a lot of my clients to do is to keep a journal or a log and all communications with this individual in writing, whether it's text message, an application, or email. And some of the applications even are affiliated with the courts, such as Family Wizard and some of the other ones that, you know, the judges can actually access them. So I think that at the very least, that's really important to do because they want to be able to show a pattern of behavior over time. And not necessarily, I tell my clients to not be so focused in showing or proving to the court that a cluster B disorder is in fact what we're dealing with the adversary, but rather to show the pattern of behavioral traits that are obviously going to affect, you know, my client and the children to be subjected to that type of behavior.
I'm so glad you brought that up because that is one thing I see so often is people trying to focus on proving to the court that their ex is a narcissist or their soon-to-be ex. And I've even had people reach out to me requesting that I be their expert witness. And I can relate to this too, because when I was going through my divorce, I really wanted to show the court that my ex was unstable and dysfunctional and abusive. But then I soon realized I was focusing on the wrong things because honestly, unless you have some kind of diagnosis from a professional, the court really doesn't want to hear it. They just want to see the facts. They want to see the evidence, what you have documented. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Right. And keep in mind that a lot of the people within the judicial system, such as the judges and even other attorneys, often possess a lot of the cluster B traits as well. So they are certainly not, they may be triggered, in fact, by a client who is really adamant about proving or even articulating or, you know, displaying that to the court.
Right. You know, I've heard that too, that, you know, a lot of people in that field are kind of narcissistic themselves. A lot of my clients have partners or ex-partners who are attorneys, and that's really scary. So that's why it's so important, I think, to have a lot of documentation. So I think it's important people realize that they do need to document abuse, because you cannot go into court expecting to win a case when you don't have any documentation. And I have worked with people who found themselves getting ready to go into a court battle, but they didn't really have any kind of documentation. They hadn't really been keeping records of anything. So that's why I wanted to invite you on to the show today, Megan, because I think people really need to understand how important this is. Can you tell us, when should you start documenting, and what things should we be keeping records of?
I mean, really everything and anything. I would advise my clients to keep track of factual scenarios, especially things that repeat themselves and, you know, patterns of behavior that can be shown and demonstrated over time. I would keep track of, you know, maybe triggers, things that tend to trigger both my clients and the other party, because as you know, cluster Bs are very predictable with their really backwards behavior. I mean, it's obviously very irrational, but it becomes incredibly predictable. So if somebody just kind of keeps almost like a journal or a diary where people keep track of what they eat in a particular day, well, it could be similar in that sense to keep track of different conversations that are had, different dialogue. And then you can really start to see a clear pattern of how the other person behaves and what things trigger them. One thing that I tell people to do when they're dealing with them as a strategy is you don't want to necessarily give away to the other person. And I mean, that's hard, because if they've been in a relationship with you for a long time, they typically know what your triggers are, what your emotional triggers are. And if you're an empathic person or a highly sensitive person, or just a person with, you know, compassion and a heart and a soul, which, as we know, narcissistic types tend to be lacking of that.
Right.
So if you have a soul, if you have a heart, and, you know, things tend to pull at your heartstrings, then they're going to know what to say or do in order to get you triggered or afraid. I talk a lot about this in more depth in the course that I did for love fraud, but like in my situation, you know, when I dealt with somebody like this that tried to use the court system against me, he knew exactly what to say or do to trigger me. He would make threats against my mother, who's over 70 years old. So he tried to do things like that. So they'll target the things that are precious to you, things that are fragile, and things that will invoke the most emotional response possible. So knowing your own self and knowing what's important to you, it's kind of hard to hide that. But if you can, you know, don't let the other person know that you're upset by them, because that is only feeding the cycle and feeding the demon, as I like to call it. So it's best to, I don't want to ever suggest that you don't get upset over something, because then you're going to start suppressing your emotions, and that can lead to disassociation and other health conditions and problems. However, let that out in a way that is positive, and channel it in your journal maybe, or, you know, with your coach that you're working with, or your life coach or therapist, or go to the gym and or go for a walk. And you don't want to suppress it, but you don't want to necessarily let the other person know that that's a trigger point, because they're going to use that against you in court potentially.
Right.
And that may be the very thing that they use to get you riled up before a hearing, in a court hearing, or they may even go so far as to make accusations against you doing something really egregious and morally depraved that would be somewhat unconscionable for the regular, average, normal person.
Right. You know, I remember that, what that was like. I remember having those threats made against me. And I hear that from my clients and my followers as well. They were just really afraid because the narcissistic person is making threats about taking their kids away. And I know that happens sometimes. And I think, you know, that's another reason why it's so important to document things. One thing that I found helpful, and Megan, maybe you can offer us some input on this and give us your own professional professional opinion, but my ex does not contact me by cell phone. At one time he did, and I did back up my text messages, all of them. I backed them up, so I was able to print them out and have them ready when I went into the hearing. But I think it's important that people not have conversations on a telephone, that they should try to keep communications, as you mentioned, either through a court-ordered email system like Our Family Wizard, or at least even just regular email. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I agree. I mean, the telephone, unless it's recorded, in which you could give permission, or I mean, you could ask for permission, likely they're not going to give it. I know a lot of people that still do record the conversations, even though technically they're not supposed to. However, there is an interesting exception to that. If you're in a public place or a place that in which your expectation of privacy is diminished, so basically not in your home or your car or something, but if you're in public, you're actually allowed to record at that point because there's an expectation of privacy is no longer there. So you can actually record without consent. Not a lot of people know that. I had a much more seasoned and experienced attorney who does a lot of litigation tell me about that. And I had no idea. And so when he told me, I was highly interested by that.
Yeah, that is interesting to know. You know, I had forgotten that. I do remember that one of my clients mentioned that to me quite some time ago, but I had forgotten about that. But yeah, I found that it's really kind of dangerous and risky to have just regular phone calls on your cell phone because you're not getting any documentation. The narcissistic person can say whatever they want, even if it's abusive. And if you don't limit your communications to something written or even recorded, then you're really just kind of putting yourself at risk, I think.
Right. And the other thing that I want to mention is if there's any witnesses, sometimes clients feel threatened or scared to, if they have to meet the other party for an exchange, especially for a drop off or
right.
pickup of a child, and it's not at a supervised location center or the sheriff's office, which unfortunately some of the cases are so bad that that's part of the order that the exchanges must take place at a sheriff's office. But a lot of times people will always want to have a third party with them as a witness because then that person can testify in court. It would not be considered hearsay because if the third party has personal and direct knowledge that they can testify to, then it's almost as good as having it recorded.
Right.
Now, of course, you want to make sure that you're choosing that person wisely because, of course, then if the other side has an attorney, they could potentially object to that witness as being biased or something like that. But most of the narcissists are always going to have what I call the flying monkeys. They're going to have a band of flying monkeys that they maybe have paid or they have some other relationship with said person in which they, you know, because maybe they've groomed them or charmed them or love bombed them. We know narcissists have multiple sources of supply to right. feed their various narcissistic needs. So
right.
they may have solicited several people that will testify in court that will be groomed and be able to provide testimony. However, when it's truly an authentic situation and it's not a situation where there's a witness that's, you know, just an actor, so to speak, and it's a real deal. I noticed that the best kind of witnesses are people that would not be biased. Like, let's say I've got a case now that I just talked to the client last night on the phone, and she's just utterly beside herself because even though we're doing well in the court case, we're actually prevailing in the court case when it's kind of almost a miracle. Like, we shouldn't be prevailing as far as what the law states. So it's really kind of an exciting case, but my client is suffering. I mean, every day she said it's just almost getting worse. And the way that this guy is behaving is awful. But as we know, eventually the truth always comes out. So this guy has misbehaved in front of families at the child's baseball games and was kicked off the field or whatever for being intoxicated and abusive. So that's a great witness to have because a coach of a softball team has no vested interest. Okay.
Right.
So they're going to be completely neutral an objective. Or for example, like a teacher at school or something like that. I really try to focus on advising my clients. And keep in mind, this is a new field. There's not a lot of case law on these things. So
right.
I'm kind of learning as I go, like what would be the best thing. But I think the best thing is to find objective, quantifiable data that can be used to show the court, this is behavior that this parent is exhibiting. This is behavior that the children are exhibiting, and to show like a change from the past with some sort of data that cannot be really controverted.
Right. Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So at what point, Megan, do you think someone should consider a restraining order?
Well, that's a tough topic. And again, I made up a course on this. Injunctions and restraining orders, I'm seeing a lot of them now that are getting creatively written, and they're extending to people's business and online publications and social media stalking and harassment. There's actually a new area of law called revenge pornography.
Yeah, I've
which
heard
is highly
of that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've actually had a few clients.
That's becoming really a hot topic.
Yeah, and that's why I tell, and I think I've even written a couple of articles about this, and I may have one out there specifically on revenge porn. And this is especially important if you're coming out of a toxic relationship and you're out there dating already, and you meet someone who you think is your soulmate, and all of a sudden you guys are exchanging intimate photos, I would highly advise against doing that for that yeah. very reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's some of these photos and videos are not even real. I mean, let's face it, the technology exists today. It's highly sophisticated. People can superimpose pictures. They can create things. Just to share my own personal testimony, because I'm very transparent and I feel that it helps people. But I mean, I dated a real psychopath. I mean, real dangerous, no boundaries type of a guy. And he threatened to tell my mother that he had found on a porn site pictures of me in this crazy pornographic site, and that I'm an online porn star. And at first I really wasn't sure, is he truly like out of his mind? Or is he creating these videos? Because he was rather savvy with technology. So I wasn't sure, but I wasn't too worried about it because my mom knew who this individual was and thought he was an absolute psychopath. So she knew. She would never have believed him, but it was just scary the extent that he would go. And he tried to actually extort me. He wanted me to pay him $20,000.
Oh my goodness.
And in exchange, and he said he wouldn't tell my mother or, you know, blast these videos. So what I did was I said, oh, send them to me. I'd like to see these videos. And of course he did. And they weren't me. So again, of course they weren't me, but I didn't know if he maybe could have superimposed is what I'm saying, like in
right.
created things, because people can do that now. But the best thing that I did with that situation is I didn't let it really get me too upset. And I think I responded back to him and I said, oh, go ahead. That's only going to make my story that much more compelling, and it's only going to be, I'll use it to my advantage for other people who are dealing with people like you. So thank you is what I said. And you know what? He had nothing to say back to that.
So it was a lot of hot air.
Yeah, it was all hot air is all it was. And the tactics. Which, as you know, that's what they're famous for.
Yeah. So I know states kind of differ in what the requirements have to be in order to get a restraining order. I had to get one, and luckily, my state recognizes emotional abuse, so they were able to help me. So we may not be able to talk about restraining orders a whole lot as far as what's required, but definitely if you're being physically abused, you need to report that right away. And especially if your kids are being abused, that's something that is completely
right.
unacceptable, regardless of the circumstances. Physical abuse is never okay. Never.
No, not at all.
So let's say someone...
And it needs to be reported immediately.
Yeah. So let's say then that someone has been issued a restraining order against, you know, an abusive partner or a spouse. Can you tell us how important it is? Can you tell our listeners how crucial it is to maintain no contact if a restraining order has been issued?
It's very crucial because the order is actually going to extend to both individuals. So you could actually, I know in Florida, I believe you could be arrested if you violate it. So it's going to extend to both people. And then sometimes they will have other language like non-hostile contact. If there's children and there needs to be contact, it will be, you know, the language will be qualified to say non-hostile contact, or, you know, it could be even more elaborate. But one thing I wanted to say in regards to somebody, if they're trying to make a decision on whether to move forward with an injunction and they're dealing with a cluster B, that is a poster child cluster B. There's no doubt about it. Not just somebody that has, because if you're an abuser, you obviously have narcissistic traits. But if we're talking like a full-blown sociopath that has like 18 out of 18 on the DSM, be very careful, because the abuser will oftentimes injure themselves and then say that you did it. Mine scratched himself and he actually was bleeding when the police came to an altercation at my residence. That I didn't even call the police. It was a neighbor that called because she had heard me screaming. And so she called, and they didn't actually arrest anybody at that time because they didn't know who to believe, which I was lucky, because he was telling the police that I abused him and that he was bleeding, and he was very convincing. And it just depends on the law enforcement that show up on that particular day. Now, previously, dealing with this particular individual, that wasn't the case. You know, in other incidences with him in his previous life, like with other women, you know, once I researched him, I found that he had a history of this, you know, in other states and with other women and really serious charges. So, and this was his MO. So, I mean, doesn't, like I said, it usually always catches up eventually, but it depends, you know, if you're really scared. Like, I was always really scared to go to the police because I'm an attorney. So I didn't want to have to deal with the court system. Really, I kind of wanted to deal with it on my own. But eventually there was a restraining order issued that I didn't even ask for it. But when there's a domestic violence charge, they automatically will issue that restraining order, and it extended to me and him.
I just thought it was important to bring that up because I've heard a lot of horror stories from my coaching client where they had gotten a restraining order against their ex, and then my client broke it by reaching out to the abuser, and then they got into trouble. And also, it makes you less credible in court.
Yes, absolutely. That can destroy the credibility 100%. So, I mean, that's a great point that you bring up. And just if you have a hearing on it, you know, it's always helpful to, again, have that narrative that you're keeping track of the abuse, because that's a lot of what they rely on, the judges, when they're issuing these, is the personal testimony. You know, you're going to be, as the victim, the best witness. If you happen to have other witnesses, then great. Sometimes people will bring a victim advocate from a domestic violence shelter. But as you know, there are no shelters or facilities at this point for narcissistic abuse, which is of the mind and of the emotions. So it's much harder to prove. And clients that have come to me with really crazy stories of covert abuse, they have not been able to get them in a lot of cases. And now that has triggered the other person. And so that can be dangerous, because once you take a step like that, as you know, the narcissist is not going to like that. So they're going to retaliate. And as we know, sometimes the retaliation is going to be something that's not able to be proven.
Right. And
depending on how savvy they are.
That's why I tell people, don't tell the narcissist what you're doing. You know, sometimes we have a moment of weakness where we feel like that person has changed their mind and they're not so bad after all. Don't go there, because it can backfire. Do not tell the abuser what you're up to. Don't tell them you're documenting. Now, it might be different if you're trying to record a private telephone call, because a lot of times you have to prove that you got their permission to do that. But don't tell them you're documenting. Don't tell them if you are recording an abusive episode. No. Don't tell them that. Don't tell them anything. If you do choose to explore going to a domestic violence center, don't tell them anything about it. Go in on your own. Give them your information. Tell them that what's happening, and let them decide if they're going to be able to help you or not. And even then don't tell the narcissist what you're doing.
Right. And oftentimes they know anyway. Sometimes they find out because they have spyware and
yeah, That happened to me too. So if you feel like you're being spied on, don't just brush it under the rug. I had to change my cell phone several times. I even had to get a brand new computer. So that is not something to be taken lightly. If you suspect that you're being spied on through your devices, I actually have a module on that inside my own program, the Essential Break Free Bootcamp. There's a special module on staying safe, you know, from the eyes of a spying ex. And they can do a lot of damage through remote spyware. Yep. So what should a person do?
Yep. It's not that difficult for them to implement the software, and there's ways to do it, I think, that are pretty simple. So
yeah,
especially with the Android phones.
Yeah, especially Androids. And that's why it's important not to let, if you have already separated from an abusive partner or spouse, don't let them into your home. Don't think that you're doing your kids any favors because you feel like you want that family unit, because those are just our fantasies that we're projecting out onto the situation. And that's what I try to tell people. And it's hard for people like you and me who are empathic, who are compassionate, who are, hoping for that traditional family unit. We got to let go of that fantasy, because I have never seen one case where a narcissist changed for the better. So when they're showing up at your door and saying, oh, I miss the kids, give me another chance. So when they're showing up and asking for another chance, you know, don't let them in, because a lot of times they're either planting stuff. They could be planting drugs. They could be stealing your precious heirlooms. They could be planting cameras. They could be installing spyware on your electronic devices while you're asleep. So don't fall for it. So Megan, what should a person do then if they have been granted a restraining order and then they see their abuser approaching them? What should they do? Like if they're out in public at Whole Foods or something and they happen to see the narcissist standing in another aisle, what should they do?
I wouldn't engage them at all.
Should they call the police at that point or just wait and see what happens?
I mean, I would probably call the police and document it. And, you know, I mean, even if it's a place where the other person could say, well, I was just doing my shopping and it was a coincidence, I would still get it documented. Because as soon as you become complacent, a lot of times they do things just to test your boundaries and to see if you will contact law enforcement or if you will actually hold them accountable.
Right. Absolutely. I remember those days very well. So what do you have to say, Megan, to someone who is feeling just extreme levels of guilt? You know, a lot of us don't want to document because we don't want to keep things from other people. We love to be transparent. We want to be upfront. We don't want to hide things. What do you have to say to people who are feeling that level of guilt about protecting themselves and protecting their children?
Well, they should really shift their perspective and how they look at it, because the guilt that they're feeling is likely the product of really pathologically defective thought patterns in the way they were raised. Maybe they were raised in a highly religious or something that's all guilt and shame based. And that is not, in most cases, the correct way to think, but that's how we become susceptible. We have to protect our own life. We have to protect the lives of our children. If we don't, then there will be no life. So
right. Absolutely. I tell people, you know, when I have someone, and I tell people, you really, what matters to you most? What happens with the narcissist or what's going to happen with you and your children? It's really a matter of survival. And I'm not just talking about physical survival here. I'm talking about mental and emotional survival, because I have seen people's lives ruined by these relationships, and especially when they didn't prepare themselves with documentation. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to win. I have seen cases turn the other way, but I think it's still going to be very important to document things. Don't have open conversations on cell phones. Really take care of yourself. If there has been physical abuse, call the cops and take pictures. If someone comes in and just, you know, bust into your home and destroys your dining room, take pictures. You need to document everything. Document if they're not getting your kids to school on time. Document everything. And again, don't tell the narcissist you're doing that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
So there you have it, listeners, how to prepare for court against a narcissist or other cluster B personality disordered person. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Heal, Grow, Evolve podcast.
Stay tuned for our next show coming up soon. And don't forget to check out letmereach.com for hundreds of articles about narcissistic abuse and how to recover.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Heal, Grow, Evolve podcast. Please visit our website, www.letmereach.com, for more articles and videos about healing from narcissistic abuse, as well as how to get your free beginner's guide to healing and empowerment. Looking to leave a toxic relationship? Check out your host Kim Saeed's book, How to Do No Contact Like a Boss, available on Amazon and Audible. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Remember, life begins after no contact.